Tanked from New Jersey, it's the SNL Nerds, the show where two comics from New Jersey nerd out about Saturday Night Live. I'm your co-host, Darren Patterson.
And I'm your co-host, John Trumbull.
John Trumbull, how are you, sir? We're recording this after the Christmas and before the New Year's.
Yes.
How is the holiday treating you, good sir?
Oh, well, you know, decently enough. Not horribly. How about you?
Same. Did okay. You know, spent time with the family, ate a lot, fell asleep early. You know, of course, the honored holiday tradition of watching Die Hard. Yes, it's not Christmas. You see a barefoot man running around Nakatomi Plaza shooting up shit. That's how I celebrate. Yeah. Still holds up. Still, I would say definitely one of the best, if not the best, action movies ever. Like,
yeah,
that thing is, it's flawless like a diamond. It is perfect.
Agreed. Yeah, it's a great movie. Holds up beautifully. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think I may start watching, like, you've seen, like, The Apartment, right? The old...
Apartment's a favorite of mine.
That's a great one, too.
I've actually been going... I've had, like, the last few days off of work, and the housemate's gone. He's off celebrating Christmas with his family, so I've been going, like, on a streak of watching movies, and I've plopped in a couple Billy Wilder movies.
Mm.
I watched Sunset Boulevard on Christmas, and last night I watched one for the first time, 1-2-3, which stars Jimmy Cagney.
Oh, I think I knew about that one.
Yeah, it was interesting. It's not it's not one of the top tier Billy Wilder films, but I picked it up recently because it was available for cheap. I was like, you know, it's tough to go wrong with Billy Wilder. So, yeah, I think I'm saving The Apartment for New Year's Eve, though. I think that's becoming my new New Year's Eve movie.
Yeah, that makes sense. Because, like, I remember, like years ago, like, the wife and I just decided to watch it on a whim because, like, oh, Billy Wilder, we've heard of him. And I don't know, if you look at the cover, the movie poster, the cover, you kind of think, oh, this is, like, probably some zany comedy romp. And I mean, comedic aspects in it, but there are a lot more deeper themes in it than I thought. It's like, oh, it deals with, like, depression and, like, self-worth.
It gets dark, man. Yeah.
It gets so dark. I was like, whoa, spoiler, I guess, but there's, like, you know, suicide gets mentioned in here. I didn't expect it to be as, like, dark as that, like, you know, about, like, loneliness and all these themes. I was like, wow, this is, I was not expecting this, but, like, we ended up really liking it, like, it being a lot more substantial, I guess, than we thought it'd be.
Yeah, Billy Wilder is just such a terrific filmmaker, and, I mean, just, like, this was the first time in a few years I've revisited Sunset Boulevard. That's still great. I love Some Like It Hot. Double Indemnity is probably, like, the best film noir ever made.
I don't think I've seen that.
I highly recommend that. It's Fred McMurray and Barbara Stanwyck and Edward G. Robinson, who's amazing in it. And The Fortune Cookie is great. That's the first movie where Jack Lemmon teamed up with Walter Matthau.
Oh, nice.
That's great. The Private Life of Sherlock Holmes. That might be my favorite Sherlock Holmes movie. That's terrific stuff. Yeah.
Is there any SNL cast in that? Maybe we could do for the podcast.
No.
Aww.
No, unfortunately not. But
boo. Lauren, why weren't you in The Private Life of Sherlock Holmes?
Well, it was made in 1969, so it was like 6 years before the show premiered.
Excuses, John.
Yeah, I know. But, you know, very worth seeing. There are some worthwhile movies to see that don't have SNL people in them.
Yeah, that's true. But, speaking of, you know, famous great filmmakers, we're going to do a little retrospective and pay respects to a great filmmaker that unfortunately, you know, passed recently. That's the great Rob Reiner.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
a couple weeks ago now. I suppose most everybody listening to this knows what happened to Rob Reiner and his wife, Michelle. I don't think we need to rehash that, but, you know,
no, it was very, no.
just, you know, very sad. They were unfortunately taken from us. Yeah. And, you know, but it's been great to see all the outpouring of love for them and for Rob Reiner's filmography in particular.
Yeah, because, I mean, we've talked about a great deal of his movies on the podcast. Mm-hmm. You know, of course, The Princess Bride, we've talked about, like, one of his crown jewels. When Harry Met Sally, another, you know, favorite of everyone. And, of course, both the Spinal Tap movies, the first one and the recent sequel that came out, The End Continues. Yep. And, I mean, and, like, again, if you look at his filmography, he did all those films. He did, you know, Stand By Me and Misery, The American President, like all these films in different genres, but like he just knocked it out the park with
Kind of similar to Billy Wilder in that way. Billy Wilder like did films in different genres, and Rob Reiner had a run that was kind of like that.
Yeah,
it was just like, yeah, I'm going to do one of the definitive romantic comedies. I'm going to do one of the all-time great horror suspense movies. I'm going to do a great courtroom drama, and you know, I'm gonna do like probably the definitive mockumentary.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible when you think of it, like everything he was able to do.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so we covered a number of those movies on our podcast. So, you know, of course, when this news hit, we were like, well, you know, how do we pay our respects to such a great man? We've already kind of did all of the SNL connected movies that he's done, and then I think this was your idea. You had this great idea to talk about this documentary that came out in 2023 on HBO Max, where Rob interviews his high school childhood friend, who's another comedic legend, the great Albert Brooks.
Yeah, this was like the two of them met in high school, and they've been best friends ever since. They say like early on in the film that they've been friends for like 60 odd years.
Yeah. So I liked how like because they talk about how they, you know, they, like you said, they met in high school. They were in a drama class, and then they mentioned how like, yeah, there were like a lot of other kids in there who were kids of famous people, like they were in the same drama class as Lee Cobb's daughter and Groucho Marx's daughter, Joey Bishop's son, and Richard Dreyfuss was in the class with them too. That's insane.
Yeah.
Like Dreyfuss is with you? Holy moly.
Well, I mean, I'm sure you have that situation a lot in the Hollywood area. You have a lot of I mentioned this guy before. I think I might have mentioned him on last week's podcast. Mark Evanier, who's a writer who lives in Los Angeles, and he went to, I think it's like Hollywood High School, and he went to with like a lot of famous people or famous people's kids. So yeah, I think it's just kind of a common thing in LA, you know?
I think so. I think I got to look it up, but I vaguely remember like, oh yeah. All right. This I'm looking it up now. Yeah. So like Maya Rudolph went to high school with Jack Black. They were in the same high school class together.
I remember, I don't know why this lodged into my brain. Cameron Diaz went to high school with Snoop Dogg. She's
what? Said
in interviews, I think I might've bought weed from Snoop Dogg in high school.
Might've.
Yeah.
Wow, that's crazy.
She's not certain, but she thinks it's likely.
There's some lanky African-American gentleman. Might have been Snoop. There's that. I mean, you know, not in L.A., but like, there's the famous story about how Neil Diamond and Barbra Streisand were in the same high school in Brooklyn years ago. But like,
Neil Diamond and who?
Barbra Streisand.
Oh, okay. I just didn't hear you.
Okay. But yeah, like, I don't think they say they didn't know. They knew of each other, but didn't like know each other.
Got it. Right.
But like, you know, and of course, and they did that You Don't Bring Me Flowers Anymore song that like somebody, you know, spliced the two of them singing together to make this huge hit. And it's like, oh, yeah, like it sounded good.
That's kind of wild.
kind of wild.
And I liked a lot of the framework of this movie is just the two of them. They're just like sitting in a restaurant. I guess they just had dinner together and they're just talking about Albert Brooks's life. And also they start out talking about their friendship. And Albert Brooks says that when he first met Rob Reiner, he didn't hear Rob Reiner's last name. He just knew him as Rob, and then he's, and so one of the early things he said to him was, "I've met Carl Reiner," and, and Rob Reiner was like, "Yeah, he's my dad."
Okay, all right.
Well, probably not terribly impressed.
Yeah, yeah. I know Carl Reiner too.
Yeah, I have dinner with him every night.
Yes, he gave me his DNA. I'm part of it. but yeah, yeah. I also like a lot of the you know, talking heads they have throughout this doc, like, you know, mm-hmm.
Chris impressive Rock. Number of people are yeah. speaking about how great Albert Brooks is.
Yeah, Chris Rock saying he's one of the most original thinkers we've ever seen. You know, Jon Stewart saying, yeah, he's like the first alt comic, if you really think about it. You know, Sharon Stone saying, oh, he's like the caviar of comedy. There's not a shortage of people speaking Albert Brooks's praise. I feel like Albert, I don't know. If I feel like Albert Brooks is one of those people that like comedy nerds like us know, but I don't know if mm-hmm. like the average Joe on the street really knows him. Like if you said Albert Brooks, you'd be like, "Oh yeah, the guy that does the voice of Finding Nemo." It's like, motherfucker,
yeah.
Come on.
I mean, that's probably his most mainstream role. Also, like if you're a Simpsons fan,
he did
several voices on The Simpsons. He was probably best known as Hank Scorpio, who was Homer's boss. In you know, when they move to a new town, and we kind of gradually over the course of the episode find out that Homer's new boss is like a Bond villain, basically.
Yes, I remember that.
He's like blackmailing extorting money from the U.S. government, like, you know, he's threatening them with a laser or something like that. It's hilarious. It's one of the all-time great Simpsons episodes.
Yeah, I think I remember them saying, yeah, like once like Albert Brooks was in the writer's room. With yeah. The Simpsons writer. The Simpsons writer just basically kind of didn't care whatever they came up with. It just were hyper-focused on Albert and whatever his ideas were. Because they, you know, they just knew that his ideas would be better and he would be able to take the show in a different place.
You know, and they also talk about, like, because Albert Brooks also has a background in stand-up comedy. And they talk about how he would go on these various variety shows in the 70s. And, you know, there were a lot more in the 1970s than there are today. He would just go on and do it a routine that he had never done before. He just come up with that afternoon, which is amazing. Just the guts it takes to do that, the confidence. And
yeah,
my God.
And they were all kind of conceptual. Like there was this one he did, like, I don't know. It really impressed me where like, I think like they interviewed Larry David and he talked about how the first time he knew about Albert Brooks was he saw him on the Tonight Show. And Albert Brooks sets it up where he's like, yeah, I filmed this movie called The History of the Animal Kingdom in under 2 minutes. I put all my money into it, personal money, but like the film's not here. It got mixed up in shipping or something like that. So I'm going to try to act it out all out with like these props I have backstage. So, and like he does this thing where he quickly flips through like this animal magazine.
Yeah,
this picture book. And then he just runs back and pulled out props from the back. And while, I don't know what song was playing.
He runs backstage and comes out with like a sheepdog in his arms.
Yeah, exactly.
Hilarious.
And I was like, this is insane. Like, and I think even Johnny Carson, encourage him not to be too rehearsed because he's like, I want to be surprised at what you come out with. So, like, you know, I don't want to see what you do in, like, you know, rehearsal or anything like that.
Yeah. He had another routine that was, I believe he did this on the Flip Wilson show where he does a ventriloquist act.
Yes.
But he's just subverting it. And he, at one point, just drops the dummy. On the stage. I mean, it's just lying there, just flat on the ground. He's just like, he just totally kills the illusion. And he's like, oh, and I'm going to have my dummy drink water and I'm going to sing. And he's lifting a glass of water into the dummy's mouth. And you see the water leaking out the back of the dummy's head. Yeah. Oh, it's so damn funny.
Yeah. And there was that. I mean, there was the one where he comes out as a mime, but he's a mime who like, talks throughout his whole act
and is explaining everything he's doing. He's like, now see, I'm pulling on a rope, but I'm not actually.
Yeah, and then it like devolves into like hacky borscht belt jokes like take my wife please while he's in his mind makeup.
Just great stuff.
Yeah, it really is interesting. Like, if you look at what all the other stand-up comics were doing at the time, yeah, it is. Mm-hmm. It definitely is really different. Like, he's like kind of playing with the idea of what comedy is and what it can mm-hmm. be, and you know, subverting expectations in a way that, like, I don't think a lot of people really saw until then. I mean, maybe, like, you know, Ernie Kovacs or something like that you can talk to, but like, as far as stand-up goes, it was like, oh wow, no, he's really kind of messing with the formula in a way that's really interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, but it's still funny to a mainstream audience too. It's yeah, you know, he's not just a comic's comic.
Right, right. Yeah, like there's that one act he had with the he said he invented the electric dummy for like mm-hmm. a ventriloquist who don't want to like, you know, learn how to throw their voice,
and he pulled it out.
It's just like an old school speaking spell.
Yes. And he's put like a smiley face on the back of it. And, yes. And he's asking it questions. And
it's like, you know where you are? TV. Yes, right. You are on TV. That's right.
Yeah. It was like, oh, you just had a date this weekend. What did she give you? VD.
That's pretty fucking brilliant, actually.
Yeah.
It's really great. And I think, you know, we see that, you know, Albert has always been this, you know, this genius. I mean, Carl Reiner, Rob's dad, is on record as saying, like, yeah, he's like one of the funniest people I've ever met in my life. Like, I think he said
Carl Reiner said on The Tonight Show, he's like, oh yeah, the funniest person in America is a 16-year-old named Albert Einstein. Because yeah, Albert Brooks's real name is Albert Einstein. He understandably changed that for the show business.
Yeah. Well, again, like, that's a wild thing to do. Like, your parents, right. your parents, like, you know, your last name is Einstein. Why would you name your kid Albert Einstein? That
yeah,
is just.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, if you look in the yearbook, they showed the yearbook picture. He went by Al Einstein.
Yeah, that's still bad.
It ain't great.
Yeah, and he's like kind of good natured about it. He talks about it with Rob Reiner, and he's like, oh yeah, well, I mean, it was awful when I was a kid because, you know, there are all the jokes. You know, now it's just sort of an interesting footnote.
Right.
And I don't really have a complex about it, but.
But yeah.
Yeah, it's.
Yeah, he turned out all right. And I think we also learned how, you know, how he kind of, you know, learned about how he learned his appreciation and love for comedy through his father, who was a you know, Borscht Belt kind of, you know, Catskills comedian who did movies and stuff, and you know, who, you know, unfortunately passed away. His dad went by the name Park Yakarkis. Mm-hmm. That was his name. And I don't, the story about him, how his dad passed away, is wild.
That
is such an insane.
He did a roast for the Friars Club. He finishes his set, and then he goes back to the table, and he just passes away at the table. He just, like, puts his head down and passes away. And then, like, after they realize what happened, they stop the show for, I think, about 20 minutes. And there was this one musician. I didn't write down the name of the musician.
Tony Martin.
Okay, Tony Martin, who had this big hit record at the time, and they're like, you should go out there and just, you know, do your big hit to entertain the audience, or, you know, to, while we take care of all this. And he his big hit at the time was There's No Tomorrow.
Wow. That was, yeah.
So he's like, yeah, maybe it's not the best idea.
Maybe don't do that
right now. Yeah.
Seem like Camptown Races or something.
Nuts.
But yeah, it was wild. It kind of reminded me of, like, The Wrestler or something, because yeah, his dad was ill for a good number of time, and like, he actually, that kind of caused him to retire from doing comedy and films, and like, he kind of came back for this one-time show, and like, they were in the Friars Club, they were letting in Lucy and Desi, and of course, like, the first time they ever let a woman into the Friars Club. And yeah, apparently he killed on this show, and like, he did so well, and he went out on top, and yeah, just sat right back down and passed away. That is, wow, that's so crazy eerie to me. It's so wild. And like, and then also, went to the mausoleum where his dad was buried, and he's buried right next to one of the original Three Stooges. He's buried next to Shemp.
Yes, yes. That was something else, yeah.
It really was. And then they also talk about his mother, too, Al Brooks' mother, like his relationship with her, and we find out like she was a singer, and you know, she was in movies, and like she met his dad on a movie set, and then they got together, and then she kind of stops. Kind of, she did. She stopped singing and focused on being a mother. And
because you know, that's just, I guess, just what you did then. If you were a woman, you were expected to give up your career to be a wife and a mother and raise the kids and take care of the household, and that was just what was done.
That's what was done. And yeah, and then they actually got into it a little bit deeper too. Like, I mean, his mother now, before, you know, has also passed. She lived till 94. But yeah, like he even gets into it, like, yeah, like there was times when I would bring up all these things I was doing, and she would say, oh, that's good for you. And she was happy for me. But yeah, like you could tell, like, you know, my mom was a human being, like any human being. And yeah, there is those little things of, you know, envy and jealousy, like what I could have done if I didn't have.
Yeah. And like he talks about how he, you know, Albert Brooks was on The Tonight Show something like 30 times, and he'd call her afterwards and he'd be like, oh, what'd you think? And she'd be like, oh, well, what did Johnny think? And it was like, oh, I can like it if Johnny liked it. And
oh, mom.
And yeah, apparently there was never, she never really openly expressed it, but there was a bit of maybe resentment or disappointment or something that her career wasn't able to go further than it did. And Albert Brooks put some of that into his movie Mother with Debbie Reynolds. That's one of the Albert Brooks movies I haven't seen. I haven't seen that one before.
I feel like I saw it like years ago. I might have seen it from my college newspaper, because I know they came out like in like the late 90s. Yeah. So I feel like I saw it. I'm pretty sure I liked it. But like, I don't know, I'd have to, maybe if I go back and watch it again, like with newer eyes, I'll be like, oh, this was deeper than I thought.
Yeah, I went back to kind of prepare for this doc. I went back and I watched or rewatched some Albert Brooks movies, because I was like, you know, I'm not as familiar with his like the movies he's written and directed as I should be. So I went and watched
his oeuvre.
Yes, if we want to get pretentious and French about it.
Oh, we do.
We do.
All right. Yeah. So, what movie did you see?
I watched like his first four directorial day projects. Real Life, which was like a mockumentary he did. This was in 1979. He plays a documentary filmmaker named Albert Brooks, which already that's great and ballsy, because you know he's not presenting himself in the best light. And it's like one of the first reality TV shows was a thing called The American Family, where they followed a family called the Louds around for like a specified period of time. Mm-hmm. And it ended up being like very dramatic. This was on like PBS, I think it was.
Right.
And it ended up being very dramatic. Like, I think the wife lets the husband know over the course of this that she wants a divorce.
Oh.
I think one of the sons comes out. He like,
he
realizes he's gay, but he comes out to his parents during this. So it ended up very dramatic. And so like a few years after this, Albert Brooks is parodying this.
Mm.
And he's got Charles Grodin in there as the father. And he's like a veterinarian. There's a great scene where he's operating on a horse. And he's so nervous that he ends up killing the horse.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, that's right.
And Albert Brooks, like, then convinces him, like, oh, no, you should let us use the footage in the documentary. And
it's like, I killed a horse. I can't use that.
Yeah, it's nuts. It's you know, it's wild. It's uncomfortable. Like, if you like the uncomfortable sort of humor of, like, something like The Office, I think you would enjoy Real Life or Albert Brooks' films in general.
Yeah, because I remember seeing that years ago, and that movie ended up being pretty prophetic, because it is a thing where like he's just filming this family, but you know, because it is show business, and because you know, they want to see like a return on their investment. He kind of is like, oh, I need to do something or interject here to make this story more exciting, to make it more real, which is like what they do now in reality TV shows all the time, where they try to, you know, mess with reality to make it more exciting, make it pop more for the audiences. And but
And he's doing this in 1979, basically about how reality TV can't help but be compromised because it's always going to be affected by the fact that you are recording it, and they're always going to try and goose it up to make it more exciting or salacious or whatever.
Yeah, that movie really opened up my eyes to like what so reality pathetic. TV. Yeah. It really is. Like, I can't look at any reality show now without thinking that this is real life. This is It's really. I can't recommend Real Life highly enough, folks.
Yeah, It's
okay. But what else did you see? What are the other movies?
I watched Modern Romance, which was also really interesting. You know, that's about, like, in the opening scene, Albert Brooks, he's not playing himself anymore, but he kind of is, I guess. he like breaks up with his girlfriend, and then the rest of the movie, we just see him just kind of spiral because he's just going nuts with jealousy, and like they get back together, they break up again, and it's so messy, and it's just like his own neuroses screwing everything up.
Right, like that's the one where like the head of Columbia wanted him to put in a therapist scene to like explain his behavior.
But... Right, yeah, because they were like, oh, we don't understand. He's like with this attractive woman. He drives a nice car. What's his problem?
yeah, life's all right, but yeah, I don't know. But I think he kind of put his foot down. It's like, no, like the people that get it will get it.
Yeah, and this is like a Woody Allen movie, but if the director realizes what a shit he's playing.
I was going to mention Woody Allen. I like how his humor is sort of Woody Allen-esque, but it's not quite. Yeah. It's definitely different.
But he's not as forgiving of himself as Woody Allen is, I will
say. Yes, exactly. And that's why we like him more.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
But yeah, I mean, I remember with Modern Romance, them saying like how Stanley Kubrick called him and said how great a movie it was, which is, that's like the highest of compliments he could.
Yeah, he said, like, I always wanted to do a movie about jealousy. Mm-hmm. And like, how did you do this? And Albert Brooks is like, well, you know, you tell me how you had the person walking upside down in 2001 and, you know, we'll talk.
Fantastic. Yeah. I always forget Stanley Kubrick is an American. I don't know why I always think he's from the UK or something.
Well, like he lived in Britain for, I don't know, the last half of his life or something. Apparently he didn't like to fly. So
it's just like I'll live here in the UK instead of go back.
Yeah. I don't know why he decided he liked living in the UK better, but I know The Shining was shot in the UK. And I know Eyes Wide Shut was shot in the UK, even though it takes place in New York City. So they just like reconstructed New York City streets on a soundstage in the UK.
Instead of him just going back home to New York, he's just like, no, this is, can we turn Piccadilly Square into Manhattan, please?
Yeah, dude didn't like to fly, so.
Interesting. All right.
Yeah. Wild, okay. Right?
Okay, fair enough.
And let's see, I watched...
Lost in America.
I revisited that, and oh my god, that film is so. That was probably my favorite out of the bunch.
Oh wow, I gotta watch that one again.
Yeah, that was. I think I'd seen that one before, but it as well. It's a couple who, when Albert Brooks's character, he unexpectedly loses his job. He talks his wife, played by Julie Haggerty, into, oh, we should just cash out. We should sell our house and all our assets and stuff, and just take our nest egg, and we'll buy a Winnebago, and then we'll just travel the country, and we'll just drop out of society like Easy Rider. Mm. And but they're just like these two suburbanites who have no clue how to do that.
Nice.
And they go to Las Vegas, that like they're planning to like renew their vows in Las Vegas, but then his wife ends up losing all their money at the roulette table.
As you do.
and things get worse from there. And it's so funny. And, you know, again, if you like cringe comedy, it's excellent.
Yeah, there's that scene where he's trying to convince the, I guess, the head of the casino, played by Gary Marshall, to like,
yeah,
oh, you should just give us all our money back. Just think of the PR that would be, how great that would be. You're like, oh, this is the casino that gives you back your money after you lose it. People will definitely come here for that.
Right.
Gary Marshall's like, no, that's not the whole, that's not the whole point of a casino, to give back the money.
That's not what we do. That's, yeah.
That's not our thing, man.
It's wild. It's so funny. And yeah. And then we, you know, we see them like, oh, we, you know, we have to go get jobs. And there's a great scene where Albert Brooks, they're in like this small town because they can't even really afford to fill up the Winnebago with gas.
Oh, man. So
they're just like, they just pick a small town and they're like, let's go get jobs. And he goes into like this employment agency and he's like explaining to the guy, oh, yeah, my last job, I worked for this advertising agency for 8 years, one of the biggest advertising agencies. I made about $100K a year. what do you have anything like that? He's like, no, I have a crossing guard for $5.50 an hour.
Oh, God.
And we see a brief scene of Albert Brooks working as a crossing guard. It's very, very funny. Yeah.
Very funny. Yeah, it's a good one. I haven't seen that one in a minute. I should go back and watch that, too.
Yeah, yeah. And I watched Defending Your Life
for the first time. Thoughts on that?
That was interesting. I don't think that was one of my favorites. I got, you know, maybe a little repetitive for me. Maybe it'll grow on me with subsequent watches or something. But.
Yeah, I mean, Neil deGrasse Tyson loved it. Said it's the most insightful film he's ever seen.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so what, you don't like a film that Neil deGrasse Tyson raves about, sir?
I'm not saying I disliked it. I did like it. I didn't like it as much as the other ones, I think.
Okay, fair enough. Look at me trying to start a fight.
Yeah, that's one where Albert Brooks unexpectedly dies. He goes to, it's not heaven, but it's like sort of a way station on the way to heaven, where they're deciding if he moves on to the afterlife or if he has to go back and be reincarnated, try again. And they watch days of his life and determine like how courageous he was.
Yeah, like if he's worthy of going to the next step, the next level.
Right.
And I don't know, I like the concept. I thought the concept was really interesting. I like the fact that, you know, Meryl Streep is in it, mm-hmm. and she does a great job. I think he even says, oh, yeah, I got her in the movie because she's friends with Carrie Fisher, and I'm friends with Carrie Fisher. And, like, you know, we hung out at a party, and, like, I thought she would be too kind of, you know, too good, I guess, for the film. But, like, and I saw how, like, kind of chill and down to earth she was. And, like, she was like, hey, is there a part in this movie for me? And then I was like, oh, yeah, you should be in this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And Meryl Streep is great.
Yeah. Yeah. They have a nice offbeat chemistry together. That was cool. You know, and they also talked about some of his other acting roles where, you know, he's been in movies where he hasn't directed. Broadcast News, where he got an Oscar nomination.
Yes.
That's a favorite of mine. I just recently got the Criterion Collection of that.
I mean, the doc talks to James L. Brooks and, mm-hmm. you know, mentioning the sweating bullet scene where he just like straight up nervously sweats through all of his clothes during his first time behind the desk reporting the news, which is, I think he said he got the idea for that because they saw a guy on CNN just being this nervous flop sweating throughout the whole thing.
Yeah, he, like, Albert Brooks sees this on CNN at like midnight or 1 a.m. and he like calls up Albert Brooks or James L. Brooks and says like, hey, I know what we're doing in this scene and we got to have him flop sweat. And yeah, he literally like sweats through his shirt and his jacket.
It's rough.
Yeah.
It's like me in August. It's bad. Just like, oh, God, I got
so funny. And you know, they talk about him doing the voice in Finding Nemo. There's a great story where he takes his son to a screening. His son's about 4, so he gets that his dad's doing the voice of the character, but he doesn't quite get the pretend part of movies. And so he's really disturbed when the kid's mom is killed by the shark.
Yeah. Understandable. That's
and Yeah.
Understandably. So. Yeah. And then I, you know, they talk about other films. He was like, I forget he's in Taxi Driver.
That was his film debut. He's in Taxi Driver.
His film debut is Taxi Driver.
Right.
Like, I don't know. Like
scenes with Robert De Niro and Sybil Shepherd. And
that's insane. Yeah. That's the other thing about this doc. Like, you hear about all the people he knows throughout his life. Like, he knows Carrie Fisher. He dated Linda Ronstadt, which was like, whoa, son of a bitch.
Wild, right?
Yeah. It's wild. I mean, I don't know. I had a hugest crush on Linda Ronstadt as a kid. So I was like, you lucky bastard. You motherfucker.
You got a little Albert Brooks envy. Yeah.
Oh, forget about it. You know, he was in the movie Drive with Bryan Cranston and Ryan Gosling.
Yeah, and they showed a clip of that and where he's like playing this real villainous role. I haven't watched Drive. I haven't gotten around to seeing that yet. And I was like, shit, I got to see Drive. That looks amazing.
Yeah, he's a real piece of work in this film. He's he's dark and dangerous in a way you would not expect to be.
That sounds so cool. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't know. Like, oh, I mean, well, of course, there's his SNL connection where he talked to, you know, when SNL was just getting off the ground, and he talked to Lorne and Dick Ebersol about, you know, wanting to do the show. And he's the one credited as giving them the idea to have revolving hosts on the show.
Yeah, apparently they wanted Albert Brooks to be the regular host, and he's like, oh, well, every show does that. You should just have rotating hosts. And I don't – has anybody else from the show confirmed that or done that? Because I think I've only heard that story from Albert Brooks.
I got to read the book again, the Life from New York book. I remember them mentioning this. I don't know if anybody else – confirmed it, but yeah, apparently.
Yeah, it's been ages since I've read that book too, so I gotta pull out my copy and revisit that. So
yeah, but I mean, I would think if somebody, you know, if this wasn't true, somebody would be like, no, that's not true, he bullshit, and then they would like debunk it, but no one has, so I'm just taking it as fact as that.
Okay, yeah, well, what do I know then?
Yeah, and Albert Brooks did that. He, you know, did all these short films from LA and had them air on the Saturday Night Live at the time.
NBC Saturday Night.
NBC Saturday Night, yes, before.
It was known at the time, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Albert Brooks just used to hang out with Steven Spielberg and, like, interview people on the street.
That was wild. He was like, yeah, we would just go out. Steven Spielberg was like, yeah, I had my Super 8 camera. And we would just go out and interact with strangers. Albert Brooks would interview people when they were stopped at stoplights.
Yeah. It's almost like Billy on the Street, or like, as they say in the film, Sacha Baron Cohen type of thing. Like, you know.
Yeah, just doing that sort of found comedy thing where he's just,
I was like, wow, look at this guy. This fucking guy.
Nuts.
This guy. You know, they talk about his comedy album, A Star Is Bought. That he made with Harry Shearer from The Simpsons. And, like, I guess the concept behind that was that they would make a cut of the album for every radio station so it would appeal to everyone, which is pretty interesting concept.
And then he says, like, oh, and then I made the mistake of not touring to promote the album. The album just kind of bombed, and after a month it was down at the bottom of the charts. It's like number 200
or something
on the Billboard charts. And he's like, yeah, you know, so that was a big mistake that I made.
Yeah, I should have promoted this.
Yeah, and he also talks about, like, how I think he's talking about real life. And he was saying that the studio wanted to premiere it in, like, out-of-the-way markets like Honolulu or something like that. Mm. And he's like, no, you need to release it in these big markets like New York so the critics can get behind it. And he's like, and I'm so glad that I fought that battle, because my career, I would have a whole different career if I didn't get the critical notices that I got for real life.
Yeah, like Honolulu. Why would – wow.
I mean, that's just kind of like a vote of no confidence.
I guess so. Yeah, it does seem like throughout a lot of his career, especially with his films, he's had to kind of like had to fight a lot just to sort of get it out there and make sure.
Yeah, I mean, towards the end of the film, he says he was like speaking to one of his agents or one of his people, and they're like, you know, Albert, I don't understand why you always take the hard road. And he's like, you think I see two roads? This is the only way I know how to do it.
If there was an easier road, I would happily take it.
Yeah, you know,
I'd build a house on that road.
I don't know how to do a more mainstream way of doing it. And I mean, that's, you know, very self-aware.
Yeah, I respect that. Like, I'm sure, like, if he wanted to, he could do, like I guess maybe a more watered down, crowd pleasy, more palatable version of what he does, you know, for the masses. But he's like, no, like, I have this vision, and I want to do it this way. And, like, I know it's going to be a harder, you know, road to go down for it to make this vision, you know, come to fruition. But it's the only way I know how to do it. So I'm going to do it. I mean, he's respect that.
Yeah, he's just so creative. He just can't help but do things that are off the beaten path. So, yeah.
For sure. And yeah, I just like he, you know, and I just loved seeing Rob Reiner talk to him. Just like, you know, they've known each other for so long. There's that rapport where they're just old friends kind of reminiscing and talking, you know, talking about, like, you know, a lot of his other dramatic roles, Concussion and The Most Violent Year. This is 40. I forgot he was in an episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm that I really liked a bit about, where they all of his friends come to his house, and like they go through his, they open one closet, they find out he's a COVID hoarder.
Yeah,
like he has like tons and tons of Purell and face mask in there, and they all like berating him because he's a COVID hoarder, and he's like, no, it was all there when I moved in. This used to be a CVS. that's a pretty damn funny line.
Yeah, that's really funny, and so I mean, such a career he's had, it's pretty incredible.
It really is. Like, I mean, of course, like he doesn't seem to do too many films, you know, lately. I think the last one he did, which I remember coming out, like Looking for Comedy in the Muslim World. Where, like, the concept was, you know, going to India and, you know, finding humor within the Muslim people. And, like, it was at a time where, like, saying the word Muslim was, like, kind of tricky and dicey, but he wanted
to. Yeah, this was, like, 2005, so there's still, like, a lot of anti-Muslim sentiment in the air. I mean, not like now, where everything's A-OK.
yeah, everything's so much better. We've learned all the right lessons, and life is thriving.
We're not gonna make those mistakes again.
We won't get fooled again.
I mean, I still haven't seen Looking for Comedy in the Muslim World. So have you seen that one?
I have not. I mean, I remember there being a lot of controversy behind it, like how Sony said they couldn't release it because it came after the whole Danish cartoon, I don't want to say incident, but a tragedy, I guess I'll say, and like how the studio dropped the film because of that. And like, then they had to go to Warner Independent to put it out, and it premiered at the Dubai Film Festival, to, I think, mixed results. I think ultimately, I don't know. I don't think the reviews were that great, but you know, I think it did okay-ish, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like, he's still a brilliant guy. I mean, he came out with that book, 2030, a few years ago, about like what happens to America and how all young people are going to try to kill all the old people, things like that. Mm-hmm. Like, he's still, I wish he would make a movie again, like another movie or something.
Yeah, I mean, it's literally been 20 years since he's directed a movie. I don't know if he has the drive to do that anymore, but yeah, it would be nice to see him do that. But
it would be like, yeah, I'd have to go back and watch his stuff. Like, I remember Defending Your Life being a real, like, eye-opening film for me, where it's like, oh wow, this guy is like on another level, and real life as well. But like, I need to see things like modern romance.
Any movie he does with the word life in the title.
Yes. All the life movies. Defending Your Life. Real life. Life. Life Cereal. I mean, there's other movies he did too, like The Muse, the one with Sharon Stone, the one that has cameos with James Cameron pops up in it, and Scorsese.
Yeah.
Scorsese doing a pretty funny impression. you know, a heightened Scorsese-esque impression of himself.
I like when Scorsese parodies himself. That's yeah. pretty fun. Did you see him on the studio?
Yes. This year? Yes.
Yeah. That's pretty funny.
Yeah, it's like he doesn't take himself too seriously. He's like, all right, I know how people perceive me, how I may mm-hmm. come off. So let me have some fun with it and lean into it and, you know, just kind of play into the stereotype of what people think I am. It's almost like a Christopher Walken thing or a Jeff Goldblum thing where they're like, all right, mm-hmm. I know I have this persona people, you know, have kind of stuck me with. So let me play in it and lean into it and just have a good sense of humor about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, and of course, Rob Reiner pops into that film as well in The Muse.
Yes, yes.
Because, The Muse, I think Albert, well, for those that haven't seen The Muse, Albert Brooks plays like a filmmaker or a writer who's kind of hit a wall creatively. And then he talks to Jeff Bridges, who's also in his film. And he said, like, oh, you should talk to this person who's a muse, a professional muse. Like, Rob Reiner uses her. He's like, Rob Reiner, really? Mm-hmm. So Rob Reiner plays like a fictionalized version of himself in his film. And, yeah. you know, it's all about, you know, the filmmaking world and, you know, creativity and things like that. So,
yes,
I've heard The Muse. Again, that's another movie I haven't seen, but I heard it's pretty good.
I haven't seen it either. They show a couple of clips of it, and it looks like it's amusing. I was
Hey-o!
What's that?
You said amusing. I see what you did.
Yeah,
did you not mean to do that?
No, totally unintentional pun.
Wow. You're good. You're good, sir.
Okay. But they like at the very beginning of this documentary, it was like there's that notification. And at the beginning, they say like brief nudity. And I'm like, there's nudity in this?
Yeah, there is.
You know, you don't expect to find nudity in a documentary about a filmmaker. But yeah, they show a quick clip of the news where like Sharon Stone takes her robe off and she's naked briefly. And I was like, oh, okay. Oh, that's why that warning's in there. Okay.
Gotcha.
I was like, okay, all right.
Hey-o. But yeah, I mean, Albert Brooks, I mean, wow, what a life. He's one of these,
mm-hmm.
yeah, he's kind of once in a lifetime talent. I can't think of anybody out there right now who's kind of operating on, maybe Bo Burnham, maybe, but like.
We can look at people who are influenced by Albert Brooks, but yeah, yes. I don't know if there's anybody you can point to and be like, oh yeah, this person is doing what Albert Brooks is doing, because he's such a one of a kind voice. So.
Yeah, like the way his mind works and the way he thinks and the way he's able to kind of attack things like stand-up comedy and movies mm-hmm. and like all these themes. It's like, yeah, I don't know too many people now that are doing something similar to that. I mean, it's he really is one in a million.
Yeah, yeah, that's something. And, you know, it's something that his friend put this together for him. Mm. That's, you know, that's really cool. And, you know, it's a worthy addition to Robert Reiner's great filmography, I think.
Absolutely. Yeah, when we first started watching it, I did notice that they put a title card in the beginning of it, like in remembrance of yes. Rob Reiner and Michelle. Yeah. I was like, wow, yeah, that's, it still heartbreaking, but
I mean, such an awful way to go. Not what they deserve, certainly, and just, you know, it's just a shame, because I mean, even though he was, I think, like 79, something like that, it still feels like he had more to do, he had more to say. And
yeah, for sure. I don't know. Have we talked about what our favorite Rob Reiner works are, like famous?
Not really. No, I think we should.
Okay, hit me.
I mean, he has a pretty much unparalleled run from like the 80s into the early 90s.
Yeah.
We got, you know, you got Spinal Tap, The Sure Thing, Stand By Me. What's next?
Let me look it up. Is it?
Yeah. Yeah. When Harry Met Sally, Misery, A Few Good Men. Oh, Princess Bride. I'm blanking on Princess Bride.
Oh, A Few Good Men. Damn.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. I don't know if I have a favorite. I mean, they're all.
And The American President, that's another great one.
That I haven't seen. I don't think I've ever saw that one.
You
mentioned how
American good President, definitely worth seeing. Also written by Aaron Sorkin. Ooh. It's like, we might not have The West Wing if it wasn't for The American President. Because like Aaron Sorkin did a lot of research into The American President. And like, I think some of the deleted scenes ended up making their way into The West Wing somehow. He just did a lot of research into how the White House operated, and he eventually ended up doing, you know, making a TV show out of it. So.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And Martin Sheen's in it too. He plays the chief of staff.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I will have to check that out.
Killer cast. I mean, Michael Douglas, Annette Bening, Michael J. Fox is in it. Samantha Mathis is in it. Richard Dreyfuss is in it.
Ooh, his old schoolmate.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, all right. I guess I gotta watch that. Yeah, I'm looking through his oeuvre now, and I mean, there's stuff he did like, you know, later in the years, like what Rumor Has It, The Bucket List, of course.
Yeah, haven't seen those. Yeah.
Story of Us, Ghosts of Mississippi. But yeah, like it seems like his streak kind of is in the 80s and 90s. And yeah, I don't, all of these are real. I can't choose a favorite.
Just banger after banger, man.
Yeah. I mean,
it's hard to pick one. I think probably my favorite would be Spinal Tap, I think.
Mm.
That's probably the one I've rewatched the most and the one that amuses me the most. But Princess Bride is also great. I own that one. A Few Good Men is amazing. When Harry Met Sally, we both waxed rhapsodic about that movie when we did it on here.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't seen Misery in a while, so I can't really.
I rewatched Misery like a year or two back. It's still pretty great.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
You know, that's not one I'm going to break out a whole lot. But.
Yeah, I guess I'll say The Princess Bride for me. Like, that's the most rewatchable one. I think it's a perfect movie. Like, there's nothing. It's all fantastic acting, the story, the writing. Yeah.
Like, it's just such a charming movie.
Yeah, it's just charming as hell. It always makes me smile. Like, I see nothing wrong with that movie at all. It's pretty damn perfect. So I'll say The Princess Bride for me.
Okay. I think that's a great pick. That's a great pick.
All right.
It's tough to go wrong with any Rob Reiner movies from that period. So. No,
absolutely. All right. But, hey, what did you listeners think of Mr. Rob Reiner? We put the word out on the Blue Skies, and we got one response from our good friend Shari, like Starry, saying hello to two of my fave podcasters and SNL enthusiasts. Like many, I am heartbroken at the loss of a truly unique filmmaker. From his unforgettable performance on All in the Family to his transition behind the camera, we are fortunate he left behind so many cinematic gems to keep his memory alive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jeez, we didn't even talk about... like, Rob Reiner had a whole career as an actor before his directorial career, and he did continue that on, but yeah, you know, he's great in All in the Family. That's kind of one of the all-time great sitcoms, you know, it's fun to see Rob Reiner pop up in things. I think the most recent thing I saw him in was Scorsese's The Wolf of Wall Street.
Oh, wow. I don't think I've seen that one yet.
That's worth seeing. It's a long one. I think it's like, it's well over 2 hours. Scorsese doesn't really make short films anymore.
Yeah. No. If you get a Scorsese film, you sit down. You're gonna hunk. You're in for the long.
It's a commitment. You're there for the afternoon.
Don't make plans.
But it's a great film. Leonardo DiCaprio, Jonah Hill is in it. That was Margot Robbie's breakthrough role. Krista Milioti is in it.
Oh.
Well,
now.
Yeah. It's a movie about a real scumfuck of a guy, but
you sold me on it. Sold.
But, you know, it's fun watching him be really scummy.
Scumfuck, you say? I'm in.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. Wow. That's all right. Wolf of Wall Street. I will check it out. So yeah, I guess that's That's about it. John, any final words about, you know, the great Albert Brooks or the late, great Rob Reiner?
I mean, they're both incredible. I'm grateful that Albert Brooks is still with us. You know, there are a couple moments in here in the doc, because the doc came out in 2023, where Albert Brooks is talking about, like, sort of, like, the end of his life, and he's talking about, like, you know, how he's going to go before Rob Reiner, and you get, like, sort of a twinge there, because you're just like, oh, that's not what's in store for you, unfortunately. But
yeah, like, there was that one part where in the beginning of the doc where Rob is like, yeah, like, you know, I think you're the one of the funniest people I ever knew, and, like, when we were kids, I was kind of intimidated by you, because, like, how like, almost seamlessly funny you were, and, like, I really look up to you. And then Albert is like, oh, it finally took all this for you to say something nice about me. Great.
Yeah, it took all this time for me to get a compliment from
you. Like, yeah, it's like, I can't wait to hear what you say at my funeral.
Yeah.
I was like, oh no.
It's like, you know, it's just such a shame. I mean, I've had some friends of long standing, and I've had, like, friends of long standing pass. Unfortunately, I haven't had anything like my friend of 60 years. Pass. That's
rough.
Just gotta be so sad. But yeah, I mean, you know, watch Albert Brooks movies, watch Rob Reiner movies.
Yes.
If you're interested in what we say about the Rob Reiner movies we've covered on the podcast, I looked up the episode numbers. We did When Harry Met Sally in episode 169 of the pod. We did This Is Spinal Tap on episode 197. We covered The Princess Bride on episode 225 and Spinal Tap 2, The End Continues, just recently in episode 353. So
just a
little while back. So you can just, you know, look up, you can go on to non-productive.com, find them there. You can go on to the non-productive.com page on YouTube and look them up. Just do a search for SNL Nerds When Harry Met Sally or whatever, and you can find them that way. And yeah, check them out.
And that's our episode, guys. Thanks for listening to the podcast. As always, you can follow us on the Blue Skies at SNL Nerds. You can donate to our Patreon, non-productive.com, and you can listen to this magical little podcast on the YouTubes, on our YouTube page, non-productive.com. And as always, you can follow me, myself, and I on all the socials at Darren Credible. That's D-A-R-I-N Credible.
You can follow me on the socials at Trumbull Comic. That's T-R-U-M-B-U-L-L on the word comic. And yeah, check me out there. Check me out on the Blue Sky. Check me out on the Letterbox and all that stuff. So,
and all that jazz.
Yeah. So, that's it for 2025. We did it. We finished it.
Hey! That's right. It's done and done. Pack it up, boys.
All right, yeah.
We're out of here.
Are we going to continue on to the new year?
You know what? Yeah. Let's do it. Double or nothing.
Okay, all right.
next episode, first episode of the new year. As tradition, I guess now we always do like a Sherlock Holmes episode.
It kind of has evolved into a tradition.
So. It really has. Like, you know, for those that, you know, that know, we did the Holmes and Watson movie, so you don't have to watch that. And we did the Robert Downey Jr. Sherlock Holmes film, the Guy Ritchie one. Yes. And so for 2026, we're going to do the sequel of the Sherlock Holmes, Robert Downey Jr. film, Sherlock Holmes, A Game of Shadows.
Yes, this is the sequel to that. They bring in Moriarty. We got Mycroft Holmes in there, Holmes's brother, and we do this in January because January 6th is traditionally Sherlock Holmes's birthday.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll get into this. I have not seen this one since it was in the theaters.
Ooh.
I saw it in the theaters. I remember hating it. I have not revisited it since.
So all right.
I'm interested to see this again.
We start up the new year salty.
Yeah, we will. We will. Have you seen this before or no?
I don't remember. I don't think I have. So we'll We'll see how this all turns out.
We'll see. I mean, we both liked the first one, as I recall, right?
Yeah, I thought it was cool. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's sort of like Sherlock Holmes is an action movie, so
yeah.
You know, doing something a little different with it, and this is kind of continuing on in the same vein. So
yeah, I can dig it.
Yeah. So yeah. So we'll see how that one holds up.
All right. Let's see.
Maybe I'll like it now.
Like it. Maybe. Maybe. Will John like it or will he not? Tune in next week to find out.
I'll bet money he will not.
Place your bets. Go to DraftKings. Will John like this movie or will it be an absolute shit show?
That other thing. That second.
Nice.
All right, but that'll, you know, join us next week for Sherlock Holmes, A Game of Shadows with Robert Downey Jr. And, yeah, see what we think. But until then, nerds out!
This has been a Non-Productive Media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.